Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat is daf Mem Vav, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh. And we were talking about Akilat Chatanim. So I'm going to remind you why we were talking about Akilat Chatanim. Let's just remember what happened. Curiously, we had this story of a menorah that fell. And Rabbi Yochanan said that if it fell, the reason Rabbi Asi, his Talmud, did not take that menorah off of his robe so he couldn't move with the menorah on it, he wouldn't pick it up and take it off, because even Rabbi Shimon would have been meida in that case that it was usur to move for some reason. So the suggestion yesterday was, why possibly would Rabbi Shimon, who doesn't told him to hold that if it is a heavy menorah, that you're not allowed to move it? And we said it must be because he was koveh lo makom. So we're going to see later on in the Masechet that indeed things that are delicate and easily breakable, that you're koveh lo makom. And this gets involved in the idea of something that is expensive, which we'll see later on as a whole different category of muktza. And that's called muktza machmat chisaron kis. I think you wrote that down already, but it ought to be in there. Put it down if you don't have it. So muktze machmat chisaron kis. Because of a potential loss of money, this thing you don't want to be handled. So at this point, the Gemara is saying that this idea of a menorah, even though it may not be chisaron kis, but the kviat makom itself, the fact that a person would say, keep your hands off of that, it belongs on the wall where it's usually kept. Because of that, it's the equivalent, according to Rabbi Shimon, of mikatzeh le midaita. This is now what the Gemara attacked. So the last thing that we learned yesterday, and if we didn't, I don't know, maybe we didn't, but so let's learn it now. Omer le Abaye le Rav Yosef, there is right at the bottom of Mem Hei Omed Beis, that I don't like your explanation about kviat makom. Why? Because a kilat chatanim, where it's also an adam is koveh lo makom, the omar shmuel mishum rabichia, a kilat chatanim, in nonetheless, the halacha is you're allowed to be nitota umutar leforka b'shabbat. Let me just describe what we're talking about over here. We're talking about a bed for newlyweds, who need a little bit of privacy, to say the least. So you put two pieces. You have the naklite amita, which are you create a canopy by putting two poles, one on either side, headboard, footboard. Then you put a pole across the top. But remember that a pole does not have a tefach. And the reason that that's important, we'll see in a moment. When you spread the canopy over, it goes down from the top to the two sides of the bed, and it gives you privacy. So there, the idea was, we certainly don't want people moving that bed. And the whole idea is that it has a mokum choshev for itself. Nonetheless, it says beferish that it's not mukta. And not only that, you're even allowed to take it down. You take down the canopy. Why is that? Is it not considered to be breaking an ohel? No. Because since the pole doesn't have a tefach, then there's no problem in taking down the canopy and spreading the canopy, because that's not considered to be a roof at all, less than a tefach. Okay, that's not what's important to us. What's important to us is, why in the world would that not be considered to be muktza? Because you were koveh makom. Therefore, says Abaye, I think the menorah jazz is a completely different problem. What we're talking about over here is one of these very large candelabras. And it's talking about a candelabra that is made of chuliot. Let me bring you a candelabra that's made of chuliot so that I can illustrate it for you. This is a large menorah, which is difficult to move around. And because of that, it's made in chuliot. Chuliot allows you to remove the parts from each other, and then you can screw them back in and put them back together. Now, because of that, if you would actually assemble it on Shabbos, then you would be doing an Isser. What the Isser is about Cholkes Rishonim, Rashi usually learns that it's a din in Makeh B'Patish, which you have in your list. Others learn that it's a din in Binyan. And even though the Gemara says Ein Binyan B'Kelim, there is a Shita among the Rishonim, which is led by the Ramban in his big fight against Reb Zrachi Halevi, who argues on the Rif, and he holds that Rav and Shmuel Paskin, that actually there is binyan bekelim. But whatever the issue is, that's the reason that he wouldn't move it. It has nothing to do with the question of muktzah, it has to do with the question of gezerah. But if that's the case, asks the Gemara, then why did Rabbi Shimon say that it's mutter if it's a lightweight menorah? Well, it doesn't really mean that it had chuliot here. If it really had chuliot, then nobody would have allowed you to move it. But when he said chuliot, he meant phony chuliot. Ke'en chuliot, to eat pechitki. So people in order, now the truth is that this thing is a piece of junk. And it really doesn't weigh anything. As you see, I can easily lift it with one hand without even thinking about it, right? But in order to make something look expensive, nothing I can do, Barney. That may be your internet, maybe my internet, but it's the best that we have in these days. So the question over here is, note the way that it's made with these little grooves in it all around. It's made that way to make it look expensive. So basically everybody thinks, oh my gosh, now this thing weighs probably 50 pounds, you know, and you have to disconnect every piece and so on. So it became popular to make these little grooves as if it were a menorah shel chuliot, and then everybody would say, oh, why, this guy's got silver in his house, you wouldn't believe, right? So the truth is, it has these chitke in it, it has these pretend chuliots, it's like grooves around it. So since somebody might think that that's really chuliot, so therefore Reish Lakish asserted it, but that Rabbi Yochanan asserted it, okay. But anyway, the truth is that halacha l'maisa, if it really has chuliot, I couldn't care less whether it's a gedola, a katana, it would definitely be osur because of the gezerah. If, however, it has phony chuliot, so then if it's big and the phony chuliot could fool people, so then it could easily be mistaken. If it's small, everybody understands that it's just there for decoration to make it look as if it's chosher, but it doesn't really have chuliot. So the machlokas is the biktana. Ktana ispe chilki chitki. So over there, Rabbi Yochanan said, even so, we were gozer. And Reish Lakish says they're not gozer just because of that. But this is all aside, has nothing to do with our issue of muktz at all. Forget about it. Okay. So now let's get back to the main issue. And that is that Rabbi Yochanan, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yochanan paskined like Rabbi Yehuda. Did he really paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? Is it possible that Rabbi Yitzchak is correct? Because we know that, generally speaking, Rabbi Yochanan holds halacha kistam mishnah, as we've pointed out literally dozens and dozens of times. And there is a mishnah, and we're back again to our favorite mishnah in Kalim. We love this mishnah about the trolley on your luggage, the detachable trolley. So here we are again. Who thought when we're learning this Mishnah that it's going to turn out to be so much part of our Daf Yomi, of all crazy things? Pick out the one Mishnah in Kalim which you'd say, I mean, that has nothing to do with Shabbos, right? Okay, so it's Divrei Torah, Aniyim b'mokom echad, Ashirim b'mokom acher. So once again, you've got the little mechanical muchani shalah, the mechanism, which is the trolley with the wheels and the piece that pulls up, and that whole thing is called the machine, muchanim. So we said, if you could detach it, it's not considered to be part of the actual luggage, and you don't use the thickness of it to measure whether it has arbaim saw, which would mean it's too big to be moved, and therefore would not be mekabel tumah. And because of that, it's not going to be matzo be'ol ha'meis, because it's a separate kli, and it can be mekabel tumah, because it's not too big. The ein gorinot b'shabbat bizman sheyesh aleha ma'ot. You can't move it on Shabbos if it has money on it. Okay, what does that mean? That if you don't have money on it, then you can. Now, wait a minute. If it's true that according to Rabbi Yochanan, we pass like a star mishnah, this mishnah is saying, if it does not have money on it, then you're allowed to move it. But that means even though it had money on it the whole Bein HaShmoshes, it makes no difference. Now, wait a minute. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who ostensibly Rabbi Yochanan paskin like a libe de Rabbi Yitzchak, it shouldn't matter in the least whether it currently has money on it, because remember, Rabbi Yehuda holds that something becomes ipso facto muksa by virtue of the fact that the entire Bein HaShmoshes, it was not movable. So at this point, it's already considered to be out of Shabbos. But this is a Stam Mishnah, and it says you can move it, and apparently that's true only because the Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yochanan said, I paskin like a Stam Mishnah. We've got a contradiction in the Pesach like Rabbi Yochanan, because according to Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yochanan was paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, but then he's paskining against the Stam Mishnah. So how do you explain that? Well, I can explain it by simply saying that if you want things to work out, then all you need to say is that the Mishnah meant when it says Yesh Aleha Ma'ot, it doesn't mean currently Yesh Aleha Ma'ot. Come on, you need to make a problem. Say that the Mishnah is talking about it doesn't have Ma'ot means it didn't have Ma'ot during Ben HaShemashot, Shelo Lishbor Dvarav Shel Rav Yochanan. I don't want to break Rav Yochanan's Maimorim into two pieces. You don't have to make trouble when you have a way out of it. Okay, I agree. It's not like the simplest way to read the Mishnah, but it's not so bad. Anyway, on Rav Yeshua Ben Levi. Now, I just want to point out, once we've gotten through this psak of Rabbi Yochanan, that things are not quite as simple as they appear. Because remember that on Amud Beis, the last thing that Rabbi Yochanan had said was, Anu ein lanu ela b'ner k'Rabbi Shimon, avu m'neira b'nitla b'yadavachas b'nitla b'shteyadav osu l'taltala. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan paskined, as he says openly, I do paskin like Rabbi Shimon when it comes to a ner that was yashan, because I don't hold of mutzvah machmas mius, but I don't agree with everything else. Mutzvah machmas iser, I do hold of. So that's fascinating, because that means that essentially it's Rabbi Meir. And if it's Rebbe Meir, why didn't he just say, I paskin like Rebbe Meir? Moshe Forman thinks he's great, huh? He figured out Tosfos is kasha. Well, maybe he is. So Tosfos asks this problem. Why doesn't he just simply come out and say, I hold a Rebbe Meir, and then he wouldn't have to start like breaking it up. I hold like Rebbe Shimon when it comes to Muktzah Machmas Miyas, but I hold like Rebbe Yehuda when it comes to Muktzah Machmas Isser. So Tosfos explains that since Rabbi Meir never openly said what his shita is about mitzvah machmas iser, all he talked about was that din that we said before. He doesn't say beferish, I hold a mitzvah machmas iser. We only find that he holds of the case of a ner yashan that was dolok botor Shabbat. But remember that over there you have a combination of mitzvah machmas mias and mitzvah machmas iser. So in order not to say something that could be confusing, it's easier to say that, look, we know for a fact Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold a Muktzah Machmas Isser. We know for a fact that Rabbi Yehuda does hold a Muktzah Machmas Isser alone. So therefore, I want to say I hold like Rabbi Shimon only this one issue, and everything else I hold of Rabbi Yehuda. So let's keep that in mind in terms of the Shittot. Okay, I just felt it was kedai to get everything straight. Now let's get back to where we were. So we were talking about the question of how to understand our piece of luggage and its trolley, and we explained it that it would be going even according to Rabbi Yochanan. Now, once upon a time, says Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that Pam achat alach Rabbi Lidyuspara v'hora b'menorak Rabbi Shimon b'ner. Now, this is a very opaque statement. Rabbi was once traveling to Diuspara, and which probably is in Barnea's neighborhood, but thank heavens he can't tell us about it because the internet is not so good. And what happened was over there that Rebbe was Meira Halacha. And he was Meira, I'm not sure what this means, he was Meira about a Menorah, like Rabbi Shimon ben Ner. Now, what does that mean? That he had a case of a Menorah and he said it's Mutter because it's the same thing as Rabbi Shimon would have said about a Ner? Or did it mean these are two separate things? He was Heira ben Menorah, on the one hand, he was Meira that was Osir. And he was Meira that a Ner was Mutter, like we said before, because in that, maybe I'll like Rabbi Shimon, I don't know. Says Gemara, it's very opaque. Take him. Okay, now Reb Malkia once came to Reb Smaloi's house, and he moved a lamp that was not burning at that time and had been lit before Shabbos. It went out, and he moved it off of the table because he held like Rabbi Shimon. And Reb Smaloi was his host, held of Rabbi Yehuda, and he was quite upset about it. The Ikbid, Rabbi Smaloi, I mean, you're in my house, you know, ask me what to do. And Rabbi Yossi Galila, Ikla Lassu, the Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, same thing happened where Rabbi Yossi, the Amora, came to visit Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, and he also did the same thing. The Neira Shabbos had gone out from the table, and he lifted it off of the table. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina also felt it was wrong, and that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so it turns out that Rabbi Yochanan supposedly agrees, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. And he said that Rabbi Yochanan himself had mentioned that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi holds with Rabbi Shimon. Now, this is going to make problems for Rabbi Avo. Why? Because Rabbi Avo is a Talmud of both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. And over here, Rabbi Yochanan himself is describing a machlokus between himself and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. So what in the world did he do? I mean, he was bouncing between two worlds of mutzah, you know? And his two rebbes would invite him over for Shabbos. So when he was over one house, how did he act? And when he was over the other house, how did he act? Well, he was pretty smart. When he came to visit Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, he would move the menorah. When he came to visit Rabbi Yochanan, he wouldn't move the menorah. Well, now, come on. I mean, what is he, a phony of some kind? You can't do that. What does he hold? I don't understand. Manavshach. If he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, so then he should be doing like Rabbi Yehuda at all times and not move it. Just because Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says it's okay, you know, what's he going to go? He's going to go and do something that he holds his usher. And if he holds of Rabbi Shimon, so then he should be doing like Rabbi Shimon. So I understand what the problem is. Yes, obviously he wouldn't have done something usher just because Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says it's mutter. He personally held of Rabbi Shimon, but out of the respect for Rabbi Yochanan, he wasn't going to act Aliba the Rabbi Shimon when he's in Rabbi Yochanan's town, that would be a chutzpah. Okay, now let's get back to the din of Muktzah Machmat Mi'us. Because what we have over here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is, not to be confused, of course, with Rabbi Yehuda, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, a shraga de mishka shoy letiltula, but de nafta also letiltula. So according to him, you can move an oil lamp. That's not a problem. But you cannot move a kerosene lamp because it is really disgusting. It smells. And what are you going to do with it? You're not going to be, what are you going to put cookies in it? Or, I mean, you can't use it. And Rabbi Rav Yosef said, even nafta you are allowed to move. So machlokus over here, whether we're talking Aliba de Rabbi Shimon, or whether there's an issue here, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, as well as Tosfos explains. But let's take like Rashi. He's claiming that Aliba, the Rabbi Shimon, there is such a thing that even though it's not Muktzah Machmas Mius, there is such a thing that becomes so impossible that it's not usable at all. And if it's not usable at all, then it becomes the equivalent of what Rabbi Shimon agreed to is ipso facto mukta because it's simply not in anybody's mind on Shabbos. And therefore, he's claiming that even though the menorah was a kli, it's made out of metal, it's fine, but it smells so bad that you're not going to use it for anything. And therefore, it becomes the equivalent of a rock. Masha Einkein, Rabbi Shimon, who's talking about a kli that is not completely unusable, that he doesn't hold is just because it's mo'us that it becomes muktzah. Okay, so once it happened that Rav Avya came to visit Rava and his feet, his shoes were covered with mud. And he goes into Rava's house, sits down on Rava's couch and puts his feet up on the couch, which infuriated Rava, who did not like mud in his house. So Rava decided, okay, this guy's not going to get away with this. I am going to really make him trouble. So he figured he's going to attack Rav Avya and show that he doesn't know what he's talking about. So Rava boy letzaure, Rava wanted to really get him into a tight spot by asking him the kind of kashas that would back him into a corner, and then he would end up having to admit that he doesn't know what he's doing. Now, this whole thing does not seem to belong here. And there is an absolutely gorgeous, sweet, and adorable Chassam Sofer that explains the sugya so wonderfully that it's just a joy. It turns out that at the end of the Masechet, there is a whole din that Rava says, and that is that if you have charsis, so you have what we call gistra, you have broken pieces of a kli cheres that are still usable to cover over a bottle of perfume, you can use that, and it's not considered to be muktzah because it came from a kli, and it's not called shivrei kelim because it's still usable on Shabbos to cover a bottle of perfume. And because of that, you can use those charsis to scrape mud off of your shoes. Now, says the Chassam Sofer, Rav Avya did not hold of Rava, and he bedafka came in with his shoes money in order to show Rava that he refused to use the charsis that were available in the yard for cleaning off his shoes. Rava, now the whole discussion revolves around exactly this issue, where Rava is trying to obliquely get him to realize that he's a slob for not cleaning his shoes with the charsis the way that Rava holds. That was the issue. So then it ties exactly into what we were talking about a moment before. So Rava Boilitziure, so he says to him, could you explain to me why it's mutter, according to Rabban Rav Yosef, to move even something that is a kerosene when it's so disgusting? I mean, isn't it basically useless? Oh, no, says Rav Avya. It's not useless, because it's true you can't put anything in it, but couldn't you use it as a cover, maybe for a bottle of perfume? Aha! Says Rava, yes, yes, you could, couldn't you? But if that's true, then how about all those little pieces that you found in my courtyard outside? You could have used those to scrape off your shoe. So then, kol sroror shebechotzer, you should be able to be metaltel. Oh, v'chazi l'chasuyu b'uman, if you're claiming that something that's usable to put on a bottle of perfume is still called a kli, so then why couldn't you clean your shoes? Omar, again, this is all the way the Chassam Sofer says, it's all oblique in terms of the Gemara. So Rav Avya said to them, what do you mean? It's not the same at all. It's there, it is a kli. So it's ikatoras kli aleha. So you're claiming that the kli became completely boto because it's useless. That's not true, because it's not useless. Masha Inkein, to say something that was completely not a kli should have been mutter, halekatoras kli aleha, and therefore you can't use it. After all, and I'll prove that to you, doesn't it say that hasherim, vanizamim, vatabaot, various kind of bracelets or nose rings or regular rings, they, even though you're not allowed, a woman is not allowed to wear them in the Rishus Sarabim, as we're going to see later on, because anything that is easily removable and that women like to remove to show off their jewelry. Here, take a look at my new bracelet. And meanwhile, she's walking, talking with her friend in the street, showing off her bracelet. She's going to be carrying in her hand, instead of wearing, a bracelet, which is now going to be Metaltel Arbamas Rishus Sarabim. And because of that, we made a gzera that you can't go outdoors with it. Nonetheless, it says over here that you can wear it in the chotzer, where it's not usher to, not wear it, I mean carry it in the chotzer, where it's not usher to carry. And we're not going to be gozer that you can't, you should view it as muktza when you're not wearing it, as long as you don't take it outside into the Rishus Harabim. And Ula explained over there, why aren't they muktza? Because you can't call something muktza that has a din of a ktsuras akli. So even though they're only really useful to wear, and you're not wearing them, ula tainas, that you don't turn something into muktza just because you're not using it in the way it's normally used. So over here, I say the same thing is true. Once it was a kerosene lamp, it's still a kli, and now the fact that I want to use it for something that you're saying, come on, I mean, who uses a kerosene kli to cover up a bottle? It doesn't matter, but it doesn't lose its shame kli, because it could be. That's all. Omer of Nachal Bar Yitzchak, whew, boy, that was close. Rava almost embarrassed poor Rav Avya, which would have been a disaster. Brich Rachmona de lo kasife Rava le Rav Avya Baruch Hashem, who made sure that the right answer came to Rav Avya, and he wasn't embarrassed. Romele Abayel Rava. It says in a brisa that we have Moser Hashem and Shebenerva Shebekara Asur, even after it goes out. Remember, that was the brisa that we had originally brought to claim that Rabbi Shimon was contradicting himself, because over here it says, even in a kara, once it goes out, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's mutter. And we answered that this is talking about a small kara, because it's Zumil and Nair, and Rabbi Shimon was talking in the other brisa about a big kara. Fine, now I'm just pointing it to you, so you'll remember that we had this before. So Rabbi Shimon says in that case is no problem. So you see that Rabbi Shimon does not hold a muktza. The problem is the Mishnah, where Rabbi Shimon says, Kol she'ein mumonikar mi'erev yom tov ein ze min ha-muchan. In a case where you have a bechor, and the bechor can only be shechted if a mumche has said, this is a mum kavua, and you're allowed to shecht it. So we made a lot of chumras about bechoros, because we are afraid that people are going to end up being shechted to bechor, which is kachim, and they're going to make a mum in a bechor in order to be able to shecht it. So we need to, in the end, we need to bring witnesses that belong to a kohen, that it was an accident, whatever. And so if you did not have that mum before Yontav, or at least you didn't know it had a mum before Yontav, and then you see the mum, you're not allowed to use it on Yontav because it's considered to be Enom in Amuchan, which of course is another way of saying muksa to most people, but we know that Rabbi Shimon means that particularly the way it is. But if that is considered to be Enom in Amuchan, so then why isn't the Ner of Shemen Enom in Amuchan? Well, what? We've been talking about the difference between those two cases for the past week. What kind of question is that? Halchiyash, what comparison is there? The whole point of the Ner, according to Rabbi Shimon, is that just because it's currently burning, it doesn't mean that the person has given up on using this thing during Shabbos. He's just waiting for it to go out. But if you didn't know about it at all, what, I mean, I understand. You're sitting, you're telling me that whenever a person has the Bechor in his Rishus, yep, he's sitting there, okay, it's only a matter of time, another 5 minutes, we'll have a mum. That's crazy. So over there, of course, it's Enom and Amuchan. What are you going to say? Adam Yoshevu Mitzapem Atayi Pobo Mum. How is somebody thinking about that? First of all, I mean, the guy has, it's much worse than not expecting it. Basically, you have set this aside in your mind as being out of sight, out of mind for Yontev. The reason is because the guy is thinking to himself, I mean, what's the chance it's going to get a mum, you know? And even if it does get a mum, Imtim Tzulam and Lava Beg Mum, I mean, it's going to be a mum kavua that's going to be a mutter to Shechta. And even if it is a mum kavua, how am I going to get somebody to be matrit for me on Yontev? I mean, who's to say I'm going to be able to find somebody who's going to be matrit on Yontev? So because of that, Rabbi Shimon says the guy has basically made up his mind, all right, forget about it. I'm not going to be able to have this on Yontev. He's going to go out and get other food. Mosiv Rami Bar Chama. If that's true, then how do you explain the Mishnah later on that says you're allowed to be made for a neder Shabbos for your wife? And if someone has a neder that is destroying his Shabbos, namely the guy, let's say, made a neder, I'm never eating cholent again after his previous Shabbos, and now basically all there is this delicious smelling cholent, and he's going nuts, so he's got nothing to eat. So he's allowed to go to a Talmud Chacham to be shoyel on his neder. But according to you, why is that true? The woman shouldn't be allowed to eat because we should say she's thinking to herself, I mean, what makes me think that my husband's going to go ahead and be matir my neder? I mean, you said that according to Rabbi Shimon, the guy says to himself, and what makes you think that the Chacham's going to be matir my neder? Same thing over here. No, it's different because remember, Pinchas explained, according to Rava, the whole inyan of the noderet is that even in cases where she's only married min rabbanan, we allow a heter of a baal. Why? Because kol noderet al dat baalahi noderet. So the entire concept of a neder to a woman is that I'm relying on whatever my husband thinks about this neder. So it never even occurs to her for a moment. What do you mean he's not going to deal with my neder? I mean, that was the whole point of the neder, is that it's part of my relationship with my husband, which is clear in the whole parasha of the Nedarim in the Torah. Okay, fine. I understand about the woman, but what about the part of the guy who ate the cholent and made a neder never to eat cholent again? What about that? So it says also over there, why is that true? The guy should say to himself, and how do I know that I'm going to get a heter for my neder? Well, that's not a problem, because a neder, even if you don't have a chokham, you can always gather three guys and do ataras and dorim, right? So I don't need to find somebody. I mean, the three guys I can get together. I got friends. But over here, you can't do that with a Bechor, because a Bechor requires Dafka, an expert on Mumin, which is difficult to come by. And, I mean, you need a Smicha, Raya Bechores, and so on. I mean, there he's going to say, who's to say I'm going to have a guy like that? Who's going to be willing to deal with this? Especially, I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon, holds it's even awesome. Ramile Abayla Rabbi Yosef. Let's get back to what Rabbi Shimon said before. If the Nair had gone out, according to Rabbi Shimon, you can move it. Is that true? Once it went out, and only once it went out, you can move it. I mean, what's Rabbi Shimon's problem with moving it when it didn't go out? I don't understand. If he doesn't know the Muktzah was Isser, so why does he say that there's a problem in moving the Ner? It's mashma that it's only because it went out, obviously. Kafta in, lo kafta lo. Why is that? I mean, I'm assuming that the explanation is, we've spoken about this before, of course. I'm assuming that the explanation is because you're not allowed to move it since In moving it, you may actually cause the extinguishing of the ner. That would be an iser d'oraisa, right? No, wrong. Because remember that according to Rabbi Shimon, he holds that Rabbi Shimon Omer, that a dover shenem iskaven is mutter, like it said in the Braita that we've quoted so many times, that gorer adam kisei mitaves avsalu bevachelo yitkaven lasot charitz. So you're allowed to drag your bed across the floor as long as your kavana is not to make a hole in the floor as you drag it. And therefore, apparently, Rabbi Shimon holds that it doesn't matter. If in the end you ended up doing an Issa D'oraita, who cares? The same thing would be true over here, since that wasn't your kavana. If in the end the ner would go out, you wouldn't anyway be chaya, because it's a dover shenem iskaven. So why would Rabbi Shimon Aser moving the ner? Now I don't understand. You told me he doesn't hold a muksa at all. If he doesn't hold a muksa at all, then there's got to be a reason why he says you have to wait until the fire goes out. What is that reason? Says Rabbi Yosef, well, now, wait a minute. There's a big difference between the two cases, okay? When you put out a ner, I mean, just think about how you put out a match. You light a match, and you light the candle. What do you do with the match? Well, you either blow out the match, or you move your hand back and forth until the match goes out, right? It takes a second, and the match goes out. That means that it's standard practice to put out a match by shaking it. So you could put out a flame by moving it, and that would be considered to be the derech to put out a flame. But if somebody wants to make a furrow for a pipe, okay, I'm sure that all intelligent people decide that the best way to make a furrow or to plant is to take a bed and to drag the bed across the floor. What better way is there to plant on Shabbos or to make a place for a pipe on Shabbos? I'm like, are you crazy? The way that you make a place is you take a shovel and you dig it out. Nobody makes a hole by moving a bed. So even if you would move a bed on Shabbos, it would actually turn out to be only a derabbanan. Even if you really did go out and you bedavka made a hole, it would only be a derabbanan. Because any melacha that's done shalo kedarka is not considered to be melechas machshavas. So therefore, says Rabbi Yosef, if what you're doing would have been an iser d'oraita, if you did intend to do it, so kolecha d'chimachaviniki iser d'oraisa, in that case, Rabbi Shimon was geyser midrabbanan, even if you don't have kavana. And that's why over here, he says, don't move the light. But in a case where even if you wanted to do it, it wouldn't be an issur d'oraita, like the case of dragging the bed. So if you don't have kavana, Rabbi Shimon actually was matred even l'chatchila. Says Rava, sorry, that's simply not true. And therefore, it's not the explanation of why you can't move the lamp. I'll prove it to you. Is wearing kalayim a d'oraisa? Yes. And remember the case that we had? If you are selling kalayim suits, so we said over there you could put on like 10 jackets, and they could all be kalayim, as long as you have one jacket that's keeping you warm that's not kalayim, and you're going around the marketplace. Would you like a suit, buddy? How about this one? And how about that one? And you're wearing them on your back. And it says over there, mochrik suit, mochrim kedarkan, bevat shelo yitkaven b'chamam mipnei hachamam, b'gishamim mipnei hagishamim. As long as your kavana is not to protect yourself from the cold, from the heat, from the rain, so then it's not considered to be that you are wearing the kalayim because it's not with kavana. People are tsnuim, and they're makbid, that they shouldn't be looked at as wearing kalayim. They're mafshilim b'makela achareihem. Now, if you would be mechavin specifically to wear kalayim, would it be an issur d'oraita? Oh, absolutely. So, mechavin, it's an issur d'oraita. And yet, Rabbi Shimon says, if you're not being mechavin, lechatchila, you're allowed to put this on you, and it's not a problem. So, obviously, Rabbi Shimon, who says a dover shenem iskaven is mutter, means a dover shenem iskaven that could lead to an issur d'oraita is also mutter. So, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yosef, but no. That's not the answer to why you can't move the ner. Okay, so what is the answer? Ela Amar Rav, it's a totally different issue. A ner is a different world. I'll tell you the problem. Are you allowed to touch the burning shalhevet? Let's say you wanna fix the top of the candle a little bit. And you could put your finger in the shalhevet for a moment, yeah? Can you do that? Oh, no, you can't do that. Because if you would be doing that, you would be mechabe. You would dim it. Forget about it. Even put it out. So the shalhevet itself is definitely an iser to touch. Once that's true, we have a problem of basis ledavar ha'asur. Why? Because the shalhevet requires the wick for it to be attached to, that is drawing up the oil, all of which are the support system. Another way of saying the support system is the base of the shalhevet. And therefore, the entire thing is a basis. It's the base of the shalhevet. So the lamp, the oil, the ptilah, is a basis ledavar ha'asur, which is the shalhevet itself. And that is usur, even according to Rabbi Shimon. But of course, only so long as it's actually burning, which is the same as the din in our little trolley luggage. Only as long as the money's actually on there, which was the simple meaning of the Mishnah.